Shall I go on to another story?
Okay. Someone brought up the topic of wisdom. That reminds me of a story. This one comes from Burma and is called The Old Alchemist. Long ago, there lived a father who had a beautiful daughter who was the apple of his eye. Well, the day came when she married, and she married a handsome, active young man and went to live with him. Now, neither the father nor the daughter knew that this man was actually an alchemist, and his whole ambition in life was to turn lead into gold. Well, when the wife found out, she was quite excited too at the thought, well, you know, if he succeeds, he might get rich. The only problem was that he wouldn't do anything else except his alchemy. And soon enough, they ran out of money. So the daughter became quite anxious and went to her father to explain the problem. And the father said, oh my goodness, I didn't know he was an alchemist. Why didn't you tell your husband to come visit me tomorrow? Well, the wife went back home and told her husband, who, of course, wasn't happy to go see his father-in-law, I didn't know you were an alchemist, because when I was young, I was one too. And I worked as hard as I could, but I couldn't do the final step. They talked about alchemy a lot, and the young man said he had done all these experiments and nothing had worked. And the old man said he, in his work, what he finally came to was the insight that the crucial thing to change base elements into gold was the silver powder that appears in banana leaves. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but there is a silver powder on the bottom side. And then he said, the only problem is I needed a pound of it, and I'm too old to cultivate the bananas and stuff because you have to have the right incantations and things. Well, the young man volunteered to do the work if the old man would teach him all the incantations and stuff. So the old man agreed, gave the young man some money with which to buy banana plants. And he went out, cleared an area in the forest. The old man showed him the proper rituals to do and planted the bananas. And in time, they grew and had fruit, and the silver powder appeared. So he scraped it off, put it in a bottle, and had 1/10 of an ounce. So he planted more bananas. He tripled the size of his fields and grew and grew and finally scraped it off. And now he had 1 ounce of silver powder. He thought, this is taking longer than I expected. But he expanded his banana fields and year after year kept collecting the silver powder until finally he had a pound. And he ran into the house of the old man and said, I finally have that crucial ingredient you need. And the old man said, oh, good, now we can change base elements into gold. But first, bring your wife here. We need her to be a part of this. She was the Soror Mysticus, if you know about alchemy. So the wife came over, and the old man closed all the windows. Said, well, you didn't want bad people to overhear the secret. And then he said, well, before we turn base elements into gold, what did you do with all the bananas through the years? And the wife said, oh, well, I sold them, of course. She didn't want to waste them. Did you make any money out of it? Oh, yes, she said. Oh, let me see. Oh, it's in our strong box. So she went home, came back with a little box, and opened it. Then the old man saw it was full of gold coins. So he reached out to his little courtyard in his house, picked up some dirt, put it next to the gold coins, and turned to the young man and said, see, you changed base elements into gold. For a moment, the young man was angry. Then he realized the wisdom of the old man. So he gathered the silver powder, mixed it with clay, and made a bust of the old man and put it in a place of honor on his mantelpiece. So everybody lived happily and prosperously ever after. We were talking about the trickster yesterday. Here he appears. Notice, though, again, the trickery is for the benefit of the other person. It's not the old man trying to steal something from the young man. That's if you do that in fairy tales, you're the wicked old person. And the old man is wise enough to know that telling the young man to give up alchemy won't work. So he has to kind of go with the flow. It's sort of like Aikido. He sort of diverts the young man's energy very slightly. Any thoughts, sir? Reactions about the story?
Well, it reminds me of the people who get rich selling their book, telling people how to get rich.
except that they're taking money, whereas this old man was giving it something.
It seemed to me the real alchemy was turning greed into industry.
The old man transformed the young man. There's also, I think, a reassuring message for us as we get older in a technological age, because the young man was busy with chemicals and material stuff. The old man had knowledge of human nature, and that's what was crucial here. Of course, human nature doesn't change, and that's something we all can draw on, even if computers change a lot.
I think the universe is the ultimate trickster, and that it sends situations that keep testing us, and it wants us to go for the gold. But it's through the suffering or who we have to be in the face of crisis or anger, facing our dark side, that gives us the payoff at the end.
Well, let me go on to the last story I was going to tell. This is a wonderful elder tale because it sums up all the themes that appear in all the other elder tales. It's an Italian story called The Shining Fish. Once upon a time, there lived a man who was a fisherman. But as he got older, he could no longer fight the winds and waves and tide, so he had to stop fishing and gathered wood in the forest, fallen wood, to sell as kindling to the village. He and his wife had three sons, and they became fishermen like their father. But the sea is a cruel provider, and one by one, the sons drowned at sea in storms. So the old man and his wife were left alone in poverty and solitude. But one day, the old man went into the forest, as he usually did, to pick up the dead wood, when he met a man with a long white beard. And the man said, "Oh, I know how difficult your life has been, so I want to help. Here's a little gift." And he gave the old man a little bag. The old man looked in and fainted. When he came to, the bag was still there, but the stranger was gone, and there was all these gold coins in the bag. That's why he had fainted. He had never seen so much wealth. So he threw his wood away and ran home laughing and skipping. Halfway home, he had a horrifying thought. "If I tell my wife about this money, she's going to squander it. She'll give it to relatives, donate it to the church, and such and such. I'm much smarter, so I won't tell her about it because I'll invest it in 401s and Roths and stuff." So he went home, hid the gold under a pile of manure in the yard, and said nothing to his wife. The next morning, he woke up and smelled sausages frying. So he went down to his wife and asked, "Well, we haven't been able to afford sausages for a while. How did you get them?" And she said, "Well, you didn't bring any wood to sell. We had no money or food left. So I thought, well, how are we going to eat?" Then I remembered we had the pile of manure, and farmers like it for fertilizer. So I sold the pile to the farmer down the road. The old man couldn't very well say anything. He ran out, no manure, no gold. He was heartbroken. But he had to go back to work because they had to eat. So he went back to the forest. Guess who he met there but the stranger with the long white beard. And the stranger laughed and said, "I know what happened with my first gift, but I still want to help, so here's another." And he gave him a little bag. The old man opened it, saw all the gold coins, and when he looked up, the stranger was gone. The old man threw away his wood, ran laughing and skipping home. Halfway there, he stopped. "If I tell my wife, she'll squander it. Maybe not. Would she? I better think about this for a few days before I tell her." So he went home and hid the gold in the ashes in the fireplace and said nothing to his wife. The next morning, he woke up and smelled fish frying. He thought, "We haven't had fresh fish for a long time." He ran down, somewhat apprehensively, and asked his wife, "Where did you get money to buy fish?" And she said, "You didn't bring any wood home. We had no money. We had no food. I thought and thought and thought, and I remembered that ashes are good for fertilizer. So I sold all the ashes in our fireplace to the farmer down the road." The old man ran to the fireplace. No ashes, no gold. Now, the story doesn't say, but the farmer down the road must be quite wealthy at this point. Well, the old man had to go back to work, but he was too embarrassed to meet the stranger with the long white beard, so he took another route. But guess who he met? But the stranger with the long white beard. The stranger looked a little annoyed, and he said, "It seems you can't keep gold. You let it run through your fingers like water. But I still want to help, so we'll try this." And he gave the old man a big bag that was moving. And the man with the long white beard said, "The bag has frogs, live frogs. Take them to the village and sell them for frog legs. And use the money to buy the largest fish you can find. Nothing else." And the stranger vanished. The old man looked in the bag. There were frogs there. He took them to the village and sold them for a sizable amount of money. And he thought, as he walked around the market, "I haven't had beer or wine for a long time, or cheese. Oh, but then I haven't been so smart with these gifts. I better listen to the stranger." And there, in front of him, was a fishmonger's stall with the biggest, most beautiful fish he had ever seen in his life, even as a fisherman. And the price was all his money. So he bought the fish, put it on his back, and started for home. Now, home was a fair distance away because he lived atop a cliff overlooking the ocean, and a storm started before he got home. The rain was falling, thunder started, so he was completely soaked by the time he got into the house. And it was so dark he couldn't even see the ocean outside at the foot of the cliff. He took the fish into his wife, and his wife said, "Oh my God, it's too big to clean for today. It's too late, so why don't you put it somewhere and I'll clean it tomorrow." Now, they didn't have refrigerators, obviously, so he thought, where could he put it? He didn't want to keep it in the house because it would be warm and start to smell. So he thought, "Oh, I'll just hang it from the roof outside the house, and the rain will keep it cool, and the storm will keep away animals." So he hung the fish, and then he and his wife went to bed. But before they fell asleep, they both said a prayer for any sailors who might be caught at sea in the storms, like their sons had been years before. In the middle of the night, they're awakened by knocking at the door. The storm was still going on, thunder and lightning, so they wondered who could be coming to their house at such a time. They opened the door and saw a group of young fishermen there who were laughing and dancing. "What are you doing here in the middle of a storm?" And the fishermen said, "We came to thank you for saving our lives." "What are you talking about?" the old man asked. "Well, you put out the beacon for us. We were caught out at sea, and it was so dark we didn't know which way was land until we saw your beacon." "What beacon?" the old man said. So the young fisherman pointed, and the old man turned and saw that the fish he had hung from his roof was shining with such a great light it could be seen for miles through the storm. And so the young fisherman and the old man and his wife came to an agreement. He hung the fish out each evening to guide them safely back, and for their part, they shared their catch with him, so that he and his wife lived in honor and prosperity the rest of their days. But the story starts off again with poverty, and actually probably the worst loss a person could suffer, the death of their children. So again, we have the theme of loss and fear of what aging might bring, and also the theme of both fishing and gathering wood, in case you didn't get the message, going into the unconscious. The old man is greedy at first and wants to hoard the gold, but finally he's able to come to terms with that. He comes to terms with his shadow side and realizes he better listen to the stranger, who would make a good symbol of the self, the higher self or the inner self. And then when he goes to the marketplace, actually it's kind of stupid to buy one large fresh fish. It would be better to buy dried fish, bread, sausages, something that would last. So he does something that seems crazy, but again, following this suggestion from the stranger. And it turns out to be a crucial thing. What's important, though, is that he hangs the fish outside, which is the opposite of what he had been doing with the gold, which was to hide it for himself. And then he becomes a helper to the next generation and saves them. And of course, it's an Italian story, so presumably the fish as a symbol of Christ would have been familiar to the audience. Any thoughts or reactions?
One thought I have is just that in working with kids, you never know what it is that they're going to find useful or what's going to save their lives. And you just have to keep working and trust that they will take something from you or somebody else, and we don't know what our beacons are sometimes.
So the story nicely shows that the treasure the old man gets is not material but spiritual, because to emphasize the point, he loses the gold twice. And what his reward is this connection to the next generation, that they wouldn't have survived without him.
He also doesn't succeed until he listens to his wife.
This story reminds me, I would think the old man is the inner wisdom figure, or the intuition, or the divine calling. Sometimes what you're asked to do seems so illogical. It would have made much more logical sense to keep the money instead of buying the fish. And he did that. He followed that, and that turned out. And also, I was thinking of the risk factor in so many of the other stories, letting the demon out of the bottle or letting the man borrow your mules, etc. And in order to be creative, we have to risk.
Now, the story brings up some important questions to ask yourself, one of which would be, what is the goal that you lost that was given as a gift? And what is your shining fish that you offer to the world?
I want to speak from under my white hair and about personal experience of, I turned 70 6 weeks ago. There was this great joy in my mid-60s, I remember, it came over me. No one could take away my job. No one could take away my children. I had nothing to lose. And this was a great joy. I could stand up and speak from my belly of the truth I knew from the years that I had lived. And this was celebrated among women, not necessarily in mixed groups. But I don't hear this in the fairy tales. I don't hear this joy of being able to step out fully into oneself. The magic towel had Estee Lauder written all over it. I don't need to put on makeup, and what I look like is, I try to achieve cleanliness. Life is simpler, but much more joyous, and I wish I could hear that reflected in the tales.
It was reflected in the tales for me in the invitation in the last story that the man could not resist the dance of moving to the rhythm of life. And that joy and not resisting and exercising actually helped him get rid of some of the lumps. So there was a payback, took part of the lumpiness away.
One of the things I've found is one of the things that I try to do after a certain age is to pass on health information to people. And although they may have to give me a nominal sum for the photocopying it, it's something like the health situation in our country, we're not always told the truth about things that we think are very common substances. And I think some of the people have seen me walking around with a button that says mercury, and then it's got a band sign on it. And that has to do with silver dental fillings. And at any age, especially women, there's a greater proneness to autoimmune disease and a lot of other complications from this. So keep your eyes open. That's what I'm trying to do, and a number of us. And we have a task force that's national called DAMS. And there are many implications, and it could be that you get 20 extra colds a year, or it could be that eventually you come down with MS and you might not have had to have gotten it, and other things. So we do have publicity and we do have things on this. Keep your eyes open. You may find out about it. And if your old silver dental fillings wear out one at a time, replace them, please, with something else for your own sakes. Thank you.
I was very moved by the final story and the joy of it and the real gold of the old couple being having their joy restored by being able to help other children that would have been killed like their own had they not hung up their own beacon. And this speaks to my own life in through the loss of my son, Stephen, age seven, 23 years ago, and the birth of Matthew Stephen Kingsley, my grandson, now, and the incredible joy in holding that new life and being a grandmother. And it comes round, it comes back.
One last comment.
This is a story. Once there was a woman who had a daughter, and her daughter grew up and became a recorder of events. We would call that a film editor. And her mother had a party, and like many people came. And the daughter got up to tell a story, and she said, not long ago, I was doing a film on the anti-war movement and looking through footage, very, very long footage. She said, I thought I saw someone I knew. And she said, I went back and I looked again, and it was my mother. She said, I knew, I saw a characteristic movement and I recognized the dress. She said, I saw my mother. And I also then saw my sister and myself. And she was just amazed. And so she said, and this is definitely going to be in that film. And then she went on to say, and so I grew up being aware that I had an obligation to participate. And that was a lovely gift to me.
I certainly am one of, I think, the youngest people here, but I guess my midlife time, I took the biggest risk that anyone could take. I was the mother of a child who was 2.5 years old, and her father and I separated, and I chose to return my daughter to her father because I had to really face my demons, which Dorothy Reichardt knows very intimately. And I had to... I had no idea what the consequences of that would be. I was living in a world of somewhat idealism that go with the flow, and when time seemed appropriate, Hannah would return, and my husband would be cooperative, which he had really never been in the marriage. So I don't know what I was really dreaming, but I was amongst Quakers and very sheltered in some respects from the dynamics of the real world. And the dynamics of the real world took me through a custody battle that I was accused of sexually abusing my daughter. I was separated from her for long periods of time. I was under supervised visitations in order to see her at all. That lasted almost, oh, I don't know, I stopped counting and looking back. But now my daughter is able to be present with me. It's very still restricted due to the legal system, and motherhood and apple pie really does not exist in this country. The court systems do not support the mother who has made choices that aren't traditional. And the time now I spend with her, I do bear the gifts of being so ultimately patient with her. And I believe I do give her a love that I have never received, nor may ever receive from my birthright parents. And I have a grace that I carry because I had shed that I was raised with, that patterns of behavior that were absolutely severe and intimidating, et cetera, et cetera. But the journey is amazing. My daughter lives in Richmond, Virginia, with her father, and I've been graced with a job to return to Richmond, which I couldn't have told you that a year ago. I couldn't have told you that when I left Pendle Hill. and I've been blessed with another home to move into. And so I've really learned that things do come around. And I was curious when I was telling the story at dinner last night, I thought, what am I telling this story about? And I realized I could somewhat laugh a little bit, and I'm somewhat distanced from it after some therapy and EMDR and everything else. But I realized, and someone said, she said, I was sharing with Jane, and she said, well, what held you up? What did you do? Who, you know, who was with you? I had to really walk it very much alone with the grace of God. I had a few touchstone people who every now and then I would speak with, but no one wanted to really communicate with you. No one really wanted to hear. No one could bear the pain of what you would say. But you do come through and you do heal and life comes around, which meant all of you are older than me and can probably tell stories just the same, but I feel it's an important message and I hope I continue to hold that.
Thank you. Well, those were the stories I plan to tell. We've come finally to the end. I just want to emphasize that these stories have one message, that when the prince and princess marry, that's only when the story really begins.